Hey guys, we're back. It's Rachel, Molly. Welcome to Cheers to Leaving. I'm Molly. That's Rachel. Say hello.
Everyone look at over there. That is Rachel.
That beautiful essence of a woman. That beautiful being. That beautiful, amazing that you can't model. See. She's so hot. If you guys didn't know already, every time I see you post any Instagram posts, I'm just like, Jesus, Rachel, stop being so hot. What the hell?
I'm so sorry. I'm just kidding. I won't. Purity culture ruined me because now, as you guys have stated in some of your podcast episodes, I have swung the other way. The first modeling shit that I went into after purity culture was straight up nude modeling. So
excellent.
I've since come back a little bit. I don't really do nude modeling anymore, mostly because I'm married and my husband doesn't like it. But if you want to see what purity culture did, it just made me embrace my body after that. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it.
Well, we have to introduce our guests. We have some really amazing guests. We have Feet of Clay, Confessions of the Cult Sisters, Sharon and Tracy, our favorite girls in the like evangelical deconstruction of the indoctrination of the cults. Favorite podcasters. So many things that we do. We're so excited to have you here. Welcome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're very excited to be here as well.
So introduce yourselves so that our listeners can recognize your voices.
Cheers, Tracy.
Yes, I'm Tracy.
And I'm Sharon.
And we are Feet of Clay.
Confessions of the Cult Sisters. But dun, now, dun, dun. Molly, you said it's not just cult sisters.
We've got cult cousins. So it's Confessions of the Cult Sisters and cult cousins.
Excellent. I think we're just turning that quiver on its head, and I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Out here just rebelling from Jesus.
Hey, Molly, I got to tell you something funny. When you guys first proposed this, and one of the communications was to do a crossover episode, I misheard it. And at first I thought you were talking about cross-dressing. And I was thinking,
what?
Yeah, I know.
Like, I mean, we could have done
and
that
I was
too.
Like, are we supposed to try to dress up to look like you and you're going to dress up to look like us?
Yes.
And then I'm like, no. Okay, wait. That's not right. I think I got it.
I prefer the double horns. I think that the double horns you guys are wearing are, you know, just great.
Right. Well, why. Tracy, you want to explain why we're into... What we're doing today.
Well, and if you guys listen to our episode 13, which is the greatest number ever, 13, we did talk about head coverings. And we said anytime that we're going to be on video, we need to have our devil horns.
Head coverings.
So we wanted to do a new merch line that had a whole variety of head coverings, but we're going to start with these. And then Sharon, I think you have even other motives for wearing this.
Well, I do. But we'll just say we both. So Tracy and I have led these really freaky parallel lives. And one of the things that is in parallel is we both really do love to dress up. I mean, we were in drama in high school. Tracy, you win the occupation award, though, because you played dress up at a Renaissance fair for work.
So. Yes.
Yes, I did. I was a beer wench.
And a beer wench. Love it.
Yeah, selling
that
beer.
That is so hot. I love that for you. Like, I would have just been so like, hot. Yes, mommy. Like, I'd be about it.
All right. And so we both did Rocky Horror, you know, dress up, yes. Rocky Horror Picture Show.
That is my favorite Halloween film to watch every year. Is the Rocky Horror Picture Show. It is fantastic.
I found out about it in college.
I was like, how did I just find out about this?
I know. That's
my
how
mom
I felt
kept
the first
it
time
from
I saw
me because she knew about it.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Well, we
and
can't
I've
have
even done
sinful.
Transvestites dancing.
Very sinful.
Touch me.
I want to feel dirty.
Yes. a great movie.
So good. Our out here in Kansas City, we have people that do a live show of it every year around Halloween. They even have a midnight show on the day of Halloween, and they just nail it each time. And so the first time I saw Rocky Horror Picture Show was actually live.
Wow.
And it was very interactive and it blew my mind and it was the best thing I'd ever seen. Of course, I did take drugs before I saw it. So that's probably why I also thought it was the best thing I'd ever seen. But then I did eventually watch the movie and I was like, no, this is amazing.
It really is. So good. Well, so I don't know if you guys have if you've listened to a couple of the episodes, we also have this little contest.
I need to pause you real quick.
What?
I have listened to every single episode have dropped.
You're amazing.
Since before they started, I listened to Tracy on I Was a Teenage Fundamentalist and I was like, I am so ready for this. Followed all your social media. Like I have been. Yes.
Wow.
I love you guys. Anyway, continue.
Well, thank you. Well, I've been playing catch up with yours. I think I've listened to 8 episodes so far. I've kind of hunt and pecked and but they're just awesome since I've been binging this last week. So it's been cool. Well, anyway, but you know, we've got this little bit of a contest going between me and Tracy, right? So like who is the most spiritual or whatever.
So we announced that, and it's really, I always say, the winners are really the losers, as in anything in evangelicalism, right? So when we're going through our history, it's like, well, who is the most devoted, the most intense, the most radical? And so we've been awarding each other points for different things. So yeah. Sharon's very competitive.
I just want to say, I've got like a...
Your devil's cape.
I see you, your devil horns, and I'm raising you, girl. I'm raising you. I got the vampire cape.
Oh, vampire.
All right. I got that going. Wait, I got to change my earplugs.
Oh, Lord.
My earplugs. I can't
I love
hear
how
you.
She pulled that out of nowhere. She was just
so
like,
now we can talk about
the
it.
Devil's,
can't
I mean,
us.
The vampire cape. And
she went all out.
I got the dark angel wings.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Those going.
Okay.
For listeners, she's just put on some angel wings, but they're black, which is appropriate.
And they're behind her head because, you know, the angel had a million eyes. There's like a flying orb.
And?
Flying orb of death.
But wait, there's more.
So she's trying to outdo me, listeners. She's trying to say,
we're going to have the flames of hell.
Did you stop at a costume store before you came here?
And the pitchfork.
So now we know what you're going to be for Halloween because there you go. You've got your costume.
There it is. So
this is incredible.
Tracy.
So she's waiting for me to award her the point because you guys, this is our first time being on camera in a podcast because we've had, as we were kind of talking before we started, it's just hard to get all the technical stuff right. And so we've you know, not done the video. And we're like, oh my God, we're gonna be on camera.
I look terrible in every single video we have ever recorded. So don't even worry your little head. We wing it.
I love it. Now I want to dress up for every single recording we do, Mom.
Every single one.
No.
It's too much work.
I'm tired.
I'm so tired.
Well, I even wanted to do it more because we recently got, I think it was more directed to me than you, Tracy, but we got 1 John 2:18 or whatever thrown at us. They were never of us because they went away from us and, you know, the antichrists have arisen. So I am proudly
embracing it.
Saying, here I am.
Here you are.
The antichrist.
There was a Facebook post where Tracy and I were kind of calling you the antichrist on their sharing.
Perfect.
Oh, it was hilarious. Oh my goodness. Well, let's get into it. If you haven't already listened to these hilarious, lovely ladies on Troy and Brian's I Was a Teenage Fundamentalist or on their own show, Feet of Clay, Confessions of a Cult Sister, highly recommend you go check those episodes out. Just because it will give you some reference for who these women are and probably help you like follow along with some nuggets that might be thrown into the conversation today with you know podcast context. But yeah, gosh, it's just really hard to know like where to start. I think I've been listening to your show, like I said, for like since it started. And I have, it has really helped me because I grew up with Keith Green's music. Mm. And so hearing, like when I saw, like, it was Keith Green, a cult leader, the name of that episode on Troy and Brian's podcast, I was like, not him.
I think you were messaging them about it too. They were like, our next episode is this. And we all were like,
fuck.
Well, you were like, not him. And I was like, who the fuck is Keith Green?
Oh, really? Yeah.
I mean, he looked familiar. It wasn't a huge part of my upbringing, but
my dad was just born again when Keith Green was getting big.
Mm.
And so he listened to all his music, and we grew up in a very, very similar stuff was going around in that time that our community was doing. So it was just really interesting. Like he did have, like, his music had a big influence on our, like, evangelical upbringing. And just like, also, like, he was someone my dad looked up to, and like, mm-hmm. we knew who he was. We knew what he looked like. We knew about the plane crash. Like my dad, like, was like kind of a Keith Green groupie, like a little bit. And so like, that was my exposure to it. So it was really interesting hearing about two people who are my parents' age, who were like very close to this icon,
mm-hmm.
and saw the inside of it, went through their deconstruction, and like came out on the other side. And I, like, to me, that is so healing. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, thank God. like there are people in my parents' generation who are like able to see the bullshit. And, you know,
it took us a long time. It took a long time.
How
long?
It did. I have to ask Rachel. So have you heard since any songs? Like, do you know now? Like, okay.
I mean, I didn't go looking for it, so I guess I'd have to say no. There's so many things that I guess I missed out on. His name sounds familiar. That's about it. Yeah. That's about it.
So my kids, equally, we're so excited to be here because you guys could be my kids' age, right? And so if my kids were to do a podcast, it would be cheers to leaving, because sometimes I'm like, oh my God, this is like, it. Were you guys in my living room? Were you in our family?
Yeah, basically.
And one of the funny stories that's come up recently is, in our, like, when I would try to do devotionals with my kids, because of course I homeschool, I would often bring out the big boom box and I'd put some Keith Green music on. And their favorite was "So You Want to Go Back to Egypt," where it's like manna from heaven, manna burgers, filet of manna cotti, manna bread. And so that really stuck with them. So now, you know, if my, you know, kids are out in public, they'll be like, okay, let me play this song for you. And people are like, that's a crazy song. If you only have to listen to one song, Rachel, go listen to Banana Bread. Because
So You Want to Go Back to Egypt.
So I did just pull up a song and the title struck me. We sang this song in church all the time. It was the "Oh Lord, You're Beautiful."
Oh,
my church sang it constantly. So I guess I do know Keith Green's song.
Yeah, yes. And Molly, you said that you guys sang Keith Green songs in worship in your house churches, mm-hmm. right?
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. I know how to play Keith Green songs on the guitar. Like, that's how I learned how to play the guitar. It was like Keith Green songs.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was wild. Like, that's why I was like, ah, not him.
Yes. Well, you know, in that. We'll go back to that in just a minute, but also, was that same episode? No, it was in your hot takes episode. You were talking about how annoying it is when Christians repurpose secular songs,
yeah.
you know, and write the lyrics, God. And how cheesy and all that.
I hate it mm-hmm. so much.
Yeah. And you said what you'd really like to see is someone to do WAP.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh my God, someone please do WAP.
Well, I don't have a video for you, but I do have an audio.
Someone did it? Someone did it?
Oh, here we go.
Now, devil got you in his hole. Gonna spank your tushy. God trying to tell you just like Moses with the burning bushy. Get on your knees and say the prayer. Don't be so goddamn wussy. All those angels making heaven fucking cushy.
No.
That's incredible.
Who did that? Also, you're going to want to send that audio to me because our sound guy is going to be like, no, I'm not playing it from
I'll
there.
I'll send you the file.
Anytime I do that, he's like, Rachel, send me the actual audio.
I'll send you the file and the lyrics.
Where did you find that?
That's Sharon's voice.
I made it up.
So oh, you Sharon did it. Wrote it. You did it. And Sharon recorded it. And Sharon is playing it here. Of course, I would have loved her to do it live, but
I really
no, I'm not doing that.
You know what? I will take the recording. That was incredible, Sharon. I think you have a future in the music and rap.
I think
and
you have to give her another damn point.
I get a point.
What the hell?
You'd be really popular amongst evangelicals. You'd be like the Weird Al of evangelicals.
Oh, there you go. The granny thing.
I can see your whole career.
Oh my God.
That's incredible.
Amazing.
So there you go. Somebody did WAP. But let's get back to the Keith Green worship music.
Enough about WAP.
I wish I had our songbook. My parents have boxes of songbooks because at one point our church was quite large. Mm-hmm. And then at one point there was multiple branches of our church. So we just like made a bunch of songbooks. So it was a collection of worship songs that my dad really liked. And he would add to it all the time. But it was like, there was a section that was like mostly all Keith Green. So yeah, we would like play a bunch of acoustic guitars and sit in a circle and sing Keith Green songs.
Kumbaya. Yeah.
Well, you know, we're children of the Jesus People movement. I say teenagers, right? And there was some really good music born out of that generation, right? The political unrest, the coffee houses that were springing up. And, you know, Sharon and I find ourselves repurposing Keith's music a lot because he was singing about his journey at that time. And so sometimes some of the stuff that he's singing is relevant, you know, even today. I just quoted it to someone in our old alumni site because they were like, I can't believe you've walked away of all people, Tracy. And I said, you know, it's kind of like that Keith Green song. I ran to the end of the highway of fundamentalism.
I love that.
Hardcore.
Repurposing
and
it.
And I saw that it was not true. And of course, Keith Green sings that he ran to the end of the highway and found truth. And it's like, well, I kind of did too. I ran to the end of the highway and everything that I had believed and held true was disintegrating before my eyes. So there's definitely some good songs that he has, definitely good melodies. And then you got to, you know, get rid of some of those lyrics.
You know, what's interesting is I was reflecting on that, like thinking of the worship songs, because, you know, we would sit around, well, first in California, we'd sit around on the floor in the living room, all of us just packed in. And then when we moved to Texas in what we called the ranch house, that big log house with this hideous bright red carpet. I mean, hideous carpet.
The signs of the living room.
Oh my God. But we'd all sit around, you know, and Keith would play guitar. He didn't do piano during our Bible studies and worship because it would just be too loud. So he played guitar. And I was thinking back on some of the songs and I was recognizing that for me, I mean, whether it was Keith's songs or later, you know, later in my journey, Hillsong and Matt Redman, anyway, all these other ones, the songs that made me feel so emotionally moved, you know, brought you to that real intensity of whatever, transcendence, emotional connection, whatever.
Or what Tracy would call a spiritual orgasm.
Or that, yeah. Or that.
Yes.
We'll go down that road in just one second. But for me, I recognized it was the ones that talked the most about how horrible I am in contrast to God's love for me, you know? And it's like those were the ones I gravitated to. And that whole message of you're just like even Amazing Grace. Okay. Yeah. That old hymn. It's like, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. And it's this whole focus on you as an individual are basically just a piece of shit. You know, that's really what you are. And like the one, my eyes are dry, my faith is old, my heart is hard, my prayers are cold. You know, it's like just self-loathing, self-recrimination. And anyway, I just find it interesting that those are the ones that would set me up for higher ecstasy because it was shoving me down into the depths that I thought I deserved.
It's the kink side of the spiritual orgasm.
Trace is like, I'm going to bring it back around.
Bondage, man, bondage.
It's like Christian emo.
Yeah.
But we were, you know, both of us, you know, we're children of alcoholic families. And I think a lot of, you know, the people that would come to the commune that we would later find out, we all brought a lot of trauma with us. Mm-hmm. And religion was the answer for a lot of our trauma. So in, you know, in contrast, you know, you live, you know, in this environment and you're not feeling worthy and you're not feeling loved. And so then you have this religion that says, well, you aren't, but God's going to love you anyway. And that was a real hook for a lot of us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the history bears out how terrible it has ended up being for so many.
Yeah, I think it's a real hook for a lot of people, which is interesting because as we're out of it, or at least for me, we're now all on journeys of self-love. But like self-love was sinful, right? It was like, only God can like love you and only you can love other people, but you're not allowed to love yourself. And I think that's interesting because what we really needed was to just love ourselves the way that we are instead of hearing that some daddy in the sky loves us how we are. But it kind of puts that whole, you know, if you came from families of alcoholics, you probably didn't get the correct attachment you needed from your caregiver. So you were looking for that in, you know, daddy God. And so that was supposed to heal your heart and, you know, mend you. But in reality, it kind of just left you more fucked up. Mm-hmm. So it is a good catch. It's a good marketing scheme.
It is. You create this problem and then you're the one to solve that. And then, of course, I think your generation, our children's generation, are the one that paid the ultimate price for that because we took that in to our parenting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just going to say, like, this is, I mean, it's all just like a response to trauma, right? So what's so interesting, what's been so healing about your podcast is like hearing people my parents' age talk about how they got into it and why they got into it and why it was important to them to be in this community and in this environment following these rules and teachings. Like, it makes sense. And I think that's helpful to me to be like, okay, like I can see this perspective now. Like, I've now heard the stories like from a different perspective. Mm. You know how they say like you can't really tell your kids anything, but they can hear it from another adult and like take it a little bit better. That's basically what this has been for me. Like it's another adult saying, "Hey, I've been where they were when they raised you, and I was that parent too. And I'm telling you right now, it was not okay, and I regret some of the things that I did, and I don't like how I approached certain things, and I understand why you're in pain." Like, that is the most validating experience. Mm. So cheers to you guys. Everyone needs to go listen to their podcast if you were raised by evangelical parents. Because it's really healing to hear that perspective.
Recently, I have started prioritizing my health and wellness habits, like exercising, eating better, and hydrating. Sometimes drinking 96 ounces of water a day can be a lot to do. That's why I like to use Liquid IV to give me some help with my hydration goals. With 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, Liquid IV hydrates 2 times faster than water alone. Plus, you can keep your daily routine exciting with 3 new flavors. White peach, green grape, and lemon lime, so you can switch it up and make your taste buds happy. I like to use it before a workout, when I'm feeling run down, or after a long night out because your girl is too old for hangovers. I love Liquid IV's convenient packaging. It's individual and ready to go, so you can just be your hydrated and fabulous self. I know I feel better when I'm hydrated. And if you're wondering about the sugar, honey, don't. It's sugar-free. There are no artificial sweeteners and zero sugar, with a proprietary amino acid allulose blend for a sweet taste without the calories or raised blood glucose levels you get from sugar. It's non-GMO and free from gluten, dairy, and soy. Get 20% off when you grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free or any other variant at liquidiv.com and use code CHEERS at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code CHEERS at liquidiv.com.
Are you guys in the, are you guys technically in the baby boomer generation? Is that?
We just had this debate
in the green room. Yeah.
I can look it up. I can look it up. But they, did you guys come to a conclusion?
End. They're in the last years of baby boomers.
I feel like you were, I kind of remember your ages. I know you said it on your podcast, but I don't.
I'm going to be 62 in 2 days when we're recording this.
Yeah, they're my parents' age.
So she's older. You said your parents were Gen X at one time. So you're, oh,
well,
cause you're
I think my mom might be like a Gen Xer because she's like 59. My dad's 61.
Yeah. If she's 59, cause I'm 60 and I'm, depending on what stat you pull, I'm at the very tail end of the boomers or in the other group. So depending on how it serves me, I claim not being a boomer or being a boomer, however it serves me.
That's fair. The boomer generation is rough.
Well, it's a big generation. So there's subcultures.
Yes. They're definitely subcultures.
Well, I think we're on the tail end of millennials. Like we're the younger millennials. Yeah. There's, cause I think there's millennials in their 40s right now. And they're like the oldest ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what years were you gals born?
92.
94.
Mm. Yeah, wow. You guys are younger than my kids. Then.
You're younger than all of my kids.
I mean, not all my kids because we had so many, but.
We had so many kids. It's hard to
you guys
keep track
had
of.
So many babies. Oh my God. They were just like walking out of you at one point.
So many. So true story. My one was like, I went the day, of course I had home births because you have home church, you have home school, and you have home births.
Hey now, hey now. Don't be hating on the home births.
She gets the point on that one. I was in a hospital every time.
Yeah, I hate hospitals. So
me too.
So I had gone to the midwife and she's like, no, you're far, far. Anyway, that night, water breaks, and 15 minutes later, that baby is born.
Wow. Oh my God.
That baby was Which ready. Number was that? Which
no, she was not there. Okay. We were not ready. We were not ready.
15 minutes?
15 minutes.
Don't say the name.
You got a baby.
Oh got God. A baby. So they
don't
were
say
kind
the
of
name, but
out.
Which one was that, Tracy?
I try to keep their names
Describe
out.
Them. Yeah, no name, but which number?
Which number?
Oh, four.
Number four.
Number
okay.
Four. I'm
okay,
number four
I know.
In my family.
Okay. So if you had them all pretty close, I feel like that happens. Labor gets real short.
Yeah, your JJ just gets real.
I know. I think of the 19 kids and counting, and I can't How? Even physiologically comprehend that, honestly.
Well, didn't she have like two or three sets of twins? So she didn't like individually give birth to 19 kids.
Okay, wait. Now that is a point of debate. Like
they can. Okay. I am willing for this question. I am willing to take whatever the judges of Cheers to Leaving say. Because this is a debate.
Okay.
Debate? Is this really a debate? Okay.
Yes. This is truly a debate. This is truly a debate.
It's for the point. It's for our competitive game.
It's for our game.
I love that you guys have a point system between the two of you.
Here's Paul, if you're listening, you're the man who has to keep track of all this. We've got an old friend from last days who's also deconstructed, and he's volunteered to help us
write
a bit.
This down.
Okay. So we both have five kids.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Wow.
However, I had twins.
You had sex five times?
Only four. Only four, because I had twins.
Okay,
only four times. Okay, so only four times for me. But, okay, so yeah, that's the thing. I had twins, so she went through five pregnancies. I went through four pregnancies. I just think giving birth to twins is more monumental than another single pregnancy. So I think I win on the childbearing. That's
okay,
my
did you have a C-section,
wait,
though?
I think
did you have a C-section?
That 9 months, because I was still nursing another baby while I was pregnant, and so I had to go through another 9 months. So in totality, I spent more time pregnant and nursing because it was, you know, elongated. So I think I win.
Well, maybe you win lactation,
okay.
But
so no. So okay, healthcare provider coming in.
Oh,
okay.
Natural healthcare provider. I'm a massage therapist.
She's not a doctor.
I'm not a doctor. Please do not.
She approached that like she was a doctor.
I'm not.
All right, doctors in the house.
A version of healthcare, a genre of healthcare.
Okay, she is somewhat in the healthcare system.
Yes, they're equally hard.
Oh, are we tying?
You're is tying. There? I feel like that's a cop out. As far as competition's sake, it's like you're all winners.
You're both strong, amazing women.
You both did great. I've never Good done. Job.
So proud
of you. I will say you they're both like very different things because I do
and they're
hear
both traumatizing
twin,
and hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Twin births and just carrying twins. Did you have a C-section, Sharon?
No.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I had the longest 15 minutes of my entire life
waiting for the other one to come out.
Well, you know, there are things they didn't tell you.
Look. Yeah.
You know, there are things they didn't tell you. Like, okay, so think about this. The uterus is contracting to push the baby out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you get one baby out. Now yep. your uterus is kind of floppy. It doesn't, it's like a little stretched out.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And maybe the baby has like turned a little bit. So what do they do? So you got the doctor sticking her, feels like she's sticking her arm up through her elbow inside yes. me.
That's very gay.
To find the,
so gay.
Okay, to find the head. And then there's two nurses. There's one on either side of me with their elbows on my abdomen. And they're shoving and shoving to kind of push this baby out.
Kind of makes sense though.
Yeah, I mean, nobody ever told me that's what would happen if you were doing vaginal birth with twins.
You know,
yeah,
they really need to get better at birth education.
They just don't talk to you about stuff. They don't tell you what to expect. And I feel like they probably do that to some extent for liability reasons. But they need to, if it's something you've never been in the situation before, they've been in the situation thousands of times. Like, you need to know.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's better now. Prepare. Maybe it's better now. Remember, that's like 35 years ago.
You might have
ago.
Been
it's
like, oh my God, worse. Is something wrong? You no, know, you maternal, have been like.
The maternal death rate is like 14%.
Yeah, it's not
in
great
certain
here.
Areas of the US. Like, it's really high. Mm. That's higher than most developing countries.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Wow.
It might be different now, though.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think a lot of things have come a long way now, even when they were 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like, birthing and babies and pregnancy is completely different now, even when I gave birth mm-hmm. 10 and a half years ago.
Most of my clients end up getting like induced and C-sections now. Like they're
that,
not even
that was a thing though 10
births.
Years ago.
Yeah.
It's yeah, I think it's a liability thing. You just have to advocate for yourself in the healthcare system.
And it's hard when you're a young mother trying to advocate for yourself.
Yeah, when you're 19.
And imagine trying to do this like being a fundamentalist. Christian who like hasn't like gotten any level of sex education or education around their
you don't even
anatomy.
Know how you got pregnant. I'm just kidding.
Right. You don't even know how you got pregnant for real. He just stuck it in and soaked for a little bit and pulled out and wheezed.
Yep. Honestly though, that kind of was my experience.
Oh, man. Oh cringy. Oh my
it's
God.
So cringy.
But like I don't you know guys were happens. These young moms like newly married super super young having babies like not knowing shit about fuck that came to your bodies and like having these scary traumatizing experiences and then you're like I mean I don't know did you guys struggle with like postpartum depression and things like that and then you were just like trying to spiritually bypass yourself?
That's a good question and I don't think anyone's ever asked me that, so Sharon.
So I'm gonna pass.
No one's ever asked me that. I don't think I struggled with postpartum depression.
Or would you have recognized it?
I don't know if I would have recognized it. That's a good question. Each of my children were born in like a different situation. So the first one was born there at Last Days Ministries. And Melody was there with me giving birth the whole thing.
Wait, in the same room?
Yes. She came in the room. Yeah, we was
and
in
you
the
both
hospital.
Gave birth in the, oh wow,
she did. So hospital. Sharon found these pictures, and of course, there's this commune mentality, but you can really feel it in her birthing pictures because half the ladies from the commune are in the waiting room, and then around Sharon at different birthings, there's like another lady, and like it was definitely
your
a group
cycles
event.
Must have been all synced. They must have all been synced from living together.
Might have been.
And that's why you all were giving birth at the same time.
No, they were all at the hospital with her. I knew
you
were
thinking. Oh, I thought you
like
were
that.
Saying they were all,
Rachel,
like, in the waiting room.
Rachel, no. But okay. I knew you were thinking that because I was watching her. I was like, she doesn't understand what's happening. No, no. These women were there to assist in the birth and to be my present.
First. Okay. But there was one gal who was actually also giving birth.
No, just Sharon. Right. And my first child. So mine was the second last days arranged, facilitated, whatever you want to call it, marriage. So my marriage was the second one in the commune cult.
Okay.
My first baby was the first last days baby after Keith and Melody's.
So you got like midsummer vibes happening in here.
So I had the first, ministry baby. And
when you gave birth, was it like in the movie Midsummer where all the women are gathered around you and they're like breathing with you and they're moving?
I don't think it was
In a Handmaid's Tale. Was it that type of shit? Was it Handmaid's Tale shit where all the handmaids gather around?
No,
that's what we think of when we think of cults.
This is in the 80s.
I am going to send you some pictures because when you look at the pictures, it's a group event.
Sharon, it was a group event.
Sharon's always been more
Sharon
of a group event person.
Sharon blacked out.
I feel like my birth, if I ever have a baby, I would like it to be a group event. Like I have like a team of women I would like to
you
be there.
You think that? You think that? And then you're there and you're in pain and you're like, I swear to God, if anyone touches me,
get the fuck away from me,
breathes in my fucking direction, I will personally murder you.
That's right. Get the fuck away from me.
I will trust you because you've had a baby.
You think that. You're like, oh, community and support and I love it and women helping women. And then you're like,
no.
You don't. It's kind of a personal experience, honestly. You got
to say what's worse than that is to have a husband at the time who's supposed to be playing this role and they're completely inadequate.
And totally like lost, checked out.
And you're like, just go.
Yeah. Some men are like that.
Yeah.
They don't know.
Well, so postpartum depression, I don't think I did, but I also recognize, one thing I've come to recognize in myself, especially in this last year or so, as I've kind of delved deeper and looked at childhood trauma and ministry trauma and other adult trauma, is that my default is put my head down and get to work. You know, it's like you just power through, you just do because nobody else is going to do it. I'm the one who's got to do it. I'm the one who's got to take care of me. And so not really giving myself a lot of space necessarily to feel. Yeah. And the gut it out mentality is kind of how I lived. And so did I have any postpartum depression? I don't really think so, but I don't know that I would have had the self-awareness enough to notice. I don't know, maybe that sounds weird, but that's
that makes sense.
I think in the reference of, you know, when we talk about Last Days Ministries and people can go pull those episodes, it was a work commune. I mean, we worked 6 days a week, 12 hours a day. The teaching was all about this is your devotion. Like your work is your devotion. And so, you know, I always tell Sharon, it was great for children of alcoholics because in some ways we were already doing that, right? You power through school, mm-hmm. you power through whatever it is that you're needing to do. And so powering through work was very, very easy for us to adopt. And then I think then the calling of being able to have as many kids as you're supposed to have, that's also your work for Jesus. So if you're feeling any kind of suffering, that is part of your devotion. It's a very sick, twisted mentality to live under for so many years. Very sick and twisted. Mm-hmm. But that was where I was at, was I don't have a right to my time. I don't have a right to me. It's all about what I am supposed to give. And then when you're pregnant and nursing and having babies, you're spent. You're really spent. But I expected that. And you know, as we've been talking, you know, to other people from, you know, Shiny Happy People, the docuseries, and starting to see a thread among homeschoolers of how abusive the mothers were, I recognize that I think a lot of that is exhaustion from child rearing. And then because that's some of my biggest guilt. I couldn't have recognized depression, but frustration, absolutely. I struggled with frustration and that ability to snap really quickly at the children. And then the guilt that follows that, because I knew that wasn't right. And seeing how prevalent that was from just your body being constantly thrashed and drained.
Yeah, I think sometimes anxiety and depression does show up in irritability, though, to some extent. Like when I was anxious right after I had my daughter, I didn't recognize it as anxiety, and it kind of manifested in this just like I had no rope. My rope was so small that it was just like I would just snap and I would get worked up so fast and so easily. Mm. And that later came to light that that was just a shit ton of anxiety.
Yeah.
And so I think probably what you're describing was probably a ton of anxiety, probably depression. I mean, what other ways do you have to express that? You know, a lot of times people think, depression is, they think of a stereotypical kind of like can't get out of bed, can't take care of themselves, can't take care of kids. But a lot of times you didn't have a choice, right? Like you had to do those things. And so the way that it was coming out was just, you weren't a healthy mom for your kids because you were exhausted and you were spent and you were anxious and you were, you know, so I don't know.
Yeah. Unless and then guilty on top of that, right? Mm-hmm. Because yep. then, and then
the more you do it,
responding.
The more you feel guilty. You're spiraling.
Hey, we know that deconstructing religious trauma is hard and can feel heavy when you're doing it on your own. We get it. We're right here with you in this process. The one thing we can always go back to is getting quality therapy with a licensed mental health professional. Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. BetterHelp is the world's largest leading therapy service, and it's 100% online. With BetterHelp, you can tap into a network of over 25,000 licensed and experienced therapists who can help you with a wide range of issues. To get started, you just answer a few questions about your needs and preferences in therapy.
That way, BetterHelp can match you with the right therapist from their network. Then you can talk to your therapist however you feel comfortable, whether it's via text, chat, phone, or video call. You can message your therapist at any time and schedule live sessions when it's convenient for you. If your therapist isn't the right fit for any reason, you can switch to a new therapist at no additional charge. With BetterHelp, you get the same professionalism and quality you expect from in-office therapy, but with a therapist who is custom picked for you. You'll have more scheduling flexibility at a more affordable price. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/cheers. That's better, HELP.com/cheers.
Yeah. When I listened to your story, Rachel, I think about that whole thing of entering motherhood with your culture and your family and your church heaping just fucking condemnation on top of you. I mean, first of all, it's just so sick and twisted and horrible. But then also, it pollutes and corrupts and steals from you certain aspects that should be joyful in that you missed out on. And my heart just broke as I heard you talk about that. And I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry that you didn't have, I'm sorry you were in that whole fucked up system that can do nothing but judge and condemn. And you just didn't deserve that at all.
Thank you. Yeah, it's something I definitely still struggle with when I think about having another child is like, I think it would actually be super healing for me to get pregnant again, have a baby in the way and in the environment that I was always supposed to have. Because even after having her, like you said, it was just, there's so much of her life that I think my brain has blacked out too, just from being such a young mom and being under all the stress and pressure and her dad shit and everyone else being like, oh, well, we're glad you had the baby, but you didn't do it right. So fuck you. You know, it's like, there's so much there that I think I've healed as much as I can from it. But I do think if I were to go through that experience again and do it on my terms, and in my environment and the way that I wanted to, I think it would just be really healing for me. But yeah, it's not supposed to be like that.
And
no, it's
not.
It's insane how much that they were able to control that. Just like every single person in my environment. But when you're in that, I mean, whole group, you don't have anyone outside of it, right? It's all, everyone's Christian. Everyone's thinking the same things. Everyone's doing the same things. And yet, you know, you're not supposed to, like, you're not supposed to get pregnant, but you're also still supposed to have the baby.
Yes.
But in the terms that you have the baby, it's just you. I mean, it's the woman's experience anyway in the world, because you can't do shit right no matter what. You know, you're not supposed to go to work. You are supposed to go to work, but you're supposed to, you know.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Damned if you don't, that whole situation. But yeah, it's just a lot of it. I have a lot of bad feelings from that time where I feel like I should have had a lot of good feelings from that time.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they robbed me of that. But yeah, I also feel that way about my childhood as well. So
yeah. Did.
Trauma. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's something that has been interesting to me. Tracy's the one that introduced me to you guys and your podcast, and hearing folks that were raised in it. You know, that is one of the things that I'm, Tracy, well, maybe Tracy understood it before I did. I'm slow to the uptake sometimes, but the difference in your experiences, because you were born into it, you had no choice, versus we joined of our own free will, you know, fucked up as we were, but we signed up for this. And so in some ways, coming out of it was easier, I think, for us. Or maybe not. I don't know. Maybe because we bought into it so deeply. You know, it doesn't really matter. It's the flavors of difficulty and the pain and the trauma and the distress. We each have our own. And it's not worth, I don't think, comparing to say, hey, if I think somebody else's experience was harder than mine, that certainly doesn't invalidate mine. You know what I mean? Because
right,
I think sometimes I hear folks who say, who are struggling with their deconstruction, and they didn't live in a cult, or they didn't have the super extreme experience. One young lady that I work with right now, you know, she's in her early 30s, and she didn't have the super, super extreme. But even just that aspect of the fundamentalism and the purity culture and the evangelical agenda, it fucked with her head. Mm-hmm. It fucked with her head. And she didn't have to live in a cult.
It will fuck you up. It will fuck you up.
It will.
Or probably life, honestly. Like, no matter how it was introduced to you, I think everything about purity culture is so harmful to your body. And I did listen to your first episode on purity culture, and like, yeah, it each woman has their own like story and experience with it, because it's just so harmful. It even if you weren't in a cult, it's so extremely harmful. And even like with your postpartum stories and things like that, I still am friends. I say in quotations because they don't know I'm a heathen, but people in the house church, like I'm still involved in their lives, not super closely, but like when you grow up with people, it's really hard to kind of break those ties, if that makes sense, because you do love them a lot and you still want to be a part of their lives. And as long as you guys just don't talk about Jesus, you're fine. But I know, so my pastor had 8 kids and one of them got married, I don't remember how long ago, but they have just been pushing out babies, baby after baby after baby. And his wife, who is very young. I think they've had 3 kids. I think they just had a pregnancy. It didn't go through. And, they have been talking to me about her experience postpartum and how she had thyroid issues, which I did too postpartum, how they had to take watches with her to make sure she wouldn't hurt herself and things like that. Just like real extreme postpartum depression. But her only job is to continue to have babies. And what breaks my heart about this is fucking purity culture. And I keep trying to explain this to my mom, who is still deep into it. And she's like, well, some people want that, Rachel. I was like, she doesn't have the education, the knowledge, or the critical thinking skills to know that she doesn't want this. Correct. Her mom literally stood up at her wedding and talked about how fucking pure she had been and how she is so great because of how pure she had been. She doesn't know what she wants. How could she know what she wants? And like, that's fine. Some women do just want to have babies, but they didn't come from purity culture. You know what I mean? Like, it's completely different. And like, with her postpartum stories, I'm like, she probably shouldn't have any more babies. It is harming her mentally and physically. And like, she has three, good for her. She's done, but they won't stop. You know what I mean? And so that thinking and that I'm not going to take care of myself and I'm not going to take care of my body or my mental state or whatever, and I'm just going to have babies because that's what God wants me to do, that's what my husband wants me to do, is so harmful. And it's affecting her physically now. And it does too with sex, right? Like, women get out of purity culture and they go to have sex and they have all kinds of issues. And so, yeah, that's a more serious note, but like, I'm still seeing it happen. I'm trying to speak out about it and everyone's like, shut the fuck up. And I'm like, no, this is so harmful. This is awful. And she needs to just stop. She needs to stop having babies.
You know, the thing
get
is,
get her shit together.
Yeah.
Go from there. But why aren't we taking care of women?
I think that the women who have been raised, excuse me, the women who have been raised in this purity culture / subservience of women. Am I saying that right? Servitude. I've had, you know what?
I am such,
okay, I'm just going to say right now, I am such a cheap date. I've had one Smirnoff Ice, and like, I can't find the right word to say.
Oh, but those Smirnoff Ices will get you.
Will they get me?
They're full of sugar.
Will they pay me?
Full of sugar and alcohol. So yeah, that'll get you.
Subservient, right?
Yeah.
So women, this whole idea that women really are less than, and definitely, you know, there's the double speak of, well, you know, he created the male and female, but still, you know, the woman is the helpmate. And so we're really there to facilitate, we're there to do two things, to facilitate the man and his role to serve God and to pump out babies. And it's that lock-in of what our value and our true purpose is that really, really fucking imprisons women. And I think the question, you know, like, how would you reach it? Because we have friends that had, she had at least 11 kids. She had a stroke. Just her physical health, horrible. But they're not stopping having kids because we're quote, trusting God, right? I mean, it's like, fuck, I don't even want to say it. Yeah. We're going to trust God. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, well, you put a seatbelt on. Does that mean you don't trust God? You know, I mean, it's just,
God
it's a
gave
little,
you a brain.
It's a little ridiculous, but to be able to, without judgment, knowing that they're probably wrestling within themselves. I really do believe each one of them are. And yet they're so bought into the belief that this is what they should do. And also remember, there's the indoctrination that if you question it, that just shows your heart is wicked and you don't want to be wicked. So it's this incredibly perfect trap. And I think if someone had come to me and just quietly said, without judgment, without you should do this or you should do that, just like, hey, Sharon, so deep inside, in that quiet part of your heart that is just you, is this really what you want? Is this really what you would choose to do if you were free to do what you wished? And I think that is a little question that just kind of puts a little crack in it. And of course, you know, you're conditioned to say, well, it's what I want, I need to die to self and I need to serve
you
God.
You would have the Christian response. Right. But I think it would put like a little tickle in your brain.
Yes.
A horrible way to start, a seed or whatever.
Right.
I was trying not to do Christian.
Gently though, gently. Yeah. Because remember, I really do believe that these folks that are entrapped, imprisoned, I mean, we were there. We were totally there. And we checked ourselves into the prison. I mean, we went into that ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then you're trapped in it. And it's not feeling very good. But what you've been told and what you buy into is the reason it doesn't feel good is because there's something wrong with me. And
right. Instead of, no, your body's trying to tell you there's something wrong. And right. You have to listen to your body.
Yes.
But you're trained to be disconnected from your body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's why these podcasts are so important, because more and more of the voices that get out there, if they can be heard and start those cracks, you know, like when we were having it, there was not, the internet wasn't even up and running, right?
No, it was not.
And, you know, and I also lived in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, which is where the Amish and Mennonite live. So the big families were not an anomaly for us. And I remember wrestling with even the scripture of, is this really what God is saying about having as many babies as I'm supposed to have? Because it was starting to break down physiologically for me. And I saw the burden on the older kids that was happening. And so, and then, you know, I think I'd shared this very briefly. We didn't go into it a whole lot. I remember thinking, well, what are my ways out? And one of them would have been uterine cancer. If I get uterine cancer, my uterus gets removed and then it's done.
Oh, and shit.
Thank God I stepped back from that, you know, in this quiet place and said, I think that's really, I wouldn't have said fucked up at the time. but I was like, that's really messed up that my choice out is to have my uterus removed.
Yeah.
And, you know, because
well,
Sharon and I.
To get cancer and then yes, to have your uterus.
To get cancer.
Yeah.
And to get, and, you know, my mom had a hysterectomy and my sister had a hysterectomy. And there was this thing of, there's always that genetically, I might have a hysterectomy before I get to like 13. And, you know.
13 kids, you mean?
13 kids.
Okay.
Because we have friends like, that are there. They're 9, 11, 13. I mean, we always say, we quit. Like we went uncle at 5. Yeah.
I have 6 siblings. So there's 7 of us in my parents' house. Yeah. There was a lot of kids in my family.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the posts I think that was in the, you know, part of this journey as I started to put my storyboard up on Instagram, and it was something, I mean, I don't know, Sharon, if you even found it, but it was one of those things that I was too afraid to even say the words to myself. But there was a time where we were really struggling financially. I think I was on my 4th pregnancy and I had those big glasses like Andrea Yates, who's the one that killed her children in the bathtub. She had 5 children. And my sister, who was not a believer, she had her own, you know, crazy spiritual journey for a while, would always say, you remind me of Andrea Yates. You remind me of Andrea Yates. Aww. And it just was a dagger to me because there was that sense of, I feared that. I didn't know if it was a demon that came into her. But now I can relate to that exhaustion, that postpartum depression that we were talking about. And whatever voices led her to do that, I was afraid that could happen to me.
Wow. Well, if you were thinking of the uterine cancer and the death wish type stuff.
Yes.
You were somewhat on your way, not to say that you were going to kill your children. But you know what I mean? The snapping.
Yes.
Of some sort. You were on your way to snap in whatever way you were going to snap because of that.
Tracy, you know, I remember you, you know, I was in Richmond, you were up in Lancaster. Did I say that right this time?
Yeah, much better.
I'm going to make all of you practice saying Louisville because none of you said it
Louisville,
right.
Louisville, Louisville.
I hate that word.
I admired you and I thought that you were a much better Christian wife and mother than I was. Because remember, I had kind of started a little business on the side and it was growing and we had hired a friend from church to come in and help with the kids a bit so that I could be working in this little business I was growing out of the house to begin with. But you were homeschooling. I did it for, I think my daughter, I did kindergarten and first grade. And then with the business, now they went to Christian school. So here you are homeschooling, having these kids, not working outside the home. And I I looked up to you. I thought, wow, she is such a better Christian wife and mother and woman than I am. And I always felt guilty for that. I did. I felt definitely less than. And I think perhaps because I did have things I was focused on that wasn't just having babies and homeschooling, that maybe that kind of kept me a little bit more sane and a little bit less depressed, perhaps. Mm-hmm.
It's almost you had an identity outside of being a mother.
Yes,
it's almost like that matters.
I created it. I created an identity outside of just motherhood.
Matter. Yes, it is a really big deal. I think that women who lose themselves in motherhood are going to lose themselves, period. And yes. So it's really important to maintain a sense of
or identity. Like my mom, who now that her kids are grown and out of the house, doesn't know who the fuck she is outside of being a mother, and now has crossed so many lines and boundaries trying to mother my own daughter instead of like, you know, you need that. Your kids are around for about 20 years, but life goes on. It doesn't mean that like you're not a mom anymore. It just means that your position has changed, you know?
And so, and it's healthier modeling. That, it's much healthier modeling for the children.
Did you ladies feel like your relationships with your kids improved when you left fundamentalism? Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
100%.
What? Can you tell us a little bit about that process? That has been my biggest question for you when thinking of and prepping for this episode was, what was that transition like when it came to parenting your children and just like being in their lives when you were coming out of religion?
Tracy, let me go first because I think mine is a little shorter than yours.
Because I was deep in, man.
You were, and I admired that. I always have so much respect for you. So for me, I was already at the point where I felt like I always felt like I just wasn't a good enough Christian. And my husband would want, you know, hey, we need to be praying with the kids every morning. We need to do Bible studies with them. And I just wasn't that into it. I still had my own personal faith with Jesus and my time with Jesus, but the imposing it on my kids, it just never felt natural to me. So I was negligent in that. And the other thing that happened for me was as my business grew and it was quite successful and I was moved out of the house and I had, you know, at one point I had 100 employees. My marriage was not a healthy, happy one. And there was a good bit of, I would just say, kind of, well, spiritual / emotional abuse. And I did not know how to face it. So I wound up kind of avoiding by kind of spending more time with my business stuff than, you know, not making a priority of being more at home because I was just trying to avoid the pain. So I was not deeply involved in the indoctrination of my children. Definitely I was. I mean, we read the Bible stories, we prayed, we talked about principles and everything else, but it wasn't as intense as it otherwise would have been if I had been at home a whole lot. And I have regrets. I have a lot of regrets about that too. and when
Mom
I started...
Guilt is real.
Pardon me?
Mom guilt is real.
Oh yeah. You're guilty wherever you are. If you're at work, you're guilty. You're not with your kids.
If you're home. I'm just saying. It's awful.
It's guilt. But when I finally... And there was a kind of... It was a it coincided, my questioning of my belief system and the what I call now the Bible box, excuse me, my questioning of that. And then also I was seeing a therapist, had tried to do marriage counseling. That wasn't really working, but it was a multi-year process of gradually recognizing more and more how unhealthy and how I just could not stay in this marriage and questioning my faith and the validity of the Bible and what does all this mean? When I finally decided that I could not stay in this marriage, which that was very painful, took a long time. My two oldest kids, who both were college at that time, pretty much said, "What took you so long?" My middle child was very just a sweet, tender heart and totally bought into the Jesus thing. And then the twins that were the youngest, I think they were all confused. And because we hadn't done a lot of fighting, they hadn't seen conflict in the marriage because I hid that very well. I think they were blindsided by it. And the conversations with them, especially the middle child who was more sincere in his faith, that was very hard. It was very hard because their father was continually asking them to pray for me, for God to turn my heart, for me to go back to God, to come back to the family. So the conversations with the younger ones, it was a number of years before those could become more real, because it also took me another, hell, I don't know, fuck, another 10 years to begin to understand myself, because I'd spent so many years, decades, in total suppression of who I was, and not even in touch with my own emotions, with my own thoughts. So that was a process, a multi-year process. And I had fewer direct conversations with my children, and I always admired Tracy's relationship and conversations with hers, because she was an inspiration to me in that, with her authenticity. And so I'm going to turn it over to you, Tracy, because you're my hero woman.
So again, the winners are the losers, right? That's the theme of these games. And so I could relate to so much of your stories about home church. My ex and I were pillars in the home church, and many people looked up to us for a lot of the reasons that Sharon just talked about. And Sharon was on the phone with us a lot as we were like the counselors, because we had a very seemingly stable marriage. And I was, you know, doing all the home things that you could do.
She was to be clear about that, I would call Tracy and Lindsay. Oops. I'm sorry. I would call Tracy
<He's> and say,
you know, help me in my, you know, talk to me and my husband, because we are struggling in marriage. And they would kind of speak into and try to help us. And yeah.
Yes. Because we were, I think I was listening to one of your episodes about the home church, and it was like not officially the pastor, but the facilitator in that quasi kind of leadership role where people are looking up to you. And, you know, and I was bought in intensely. And it was really the challenging of my children as they began to come of age. And I, you know, I've got a lot of questions for you guys on that, because on the one hand, I think Sharon and I came from alcoholic families. And so there was a love deficit. But then our children, even though we are fucked up for sure, I think they knew we loved them. And I don't know what that foundation of being loved helped them to see past some of the other crap that I was not seeing, and they could see it. And especially, you know, my oldest is a female, and she got the worst of really witnessing the purity culture and would sometimes just leave in tears. And I was trying to understand, you know, what was going on. And, you know, and since then we've had a lot of conversations, and she was able to pick up this misogyny. You know, we had people into our home that all dressed in the same outfits and would sing those songs from the front. And she was devastated by just what she was picking up from these families. And I you know, at least was starting to have conversations with her so that she could put that into words. And, you know, so, you know, I think we haven't even done our episode as far as on the divorce. We were not allowed to divorce, right? So at one point it's like to divorce is to leave God. Like you have to walk out on God before you can walk out on your marriage.
Gonna go to hell, man. Gonna go to hell.
And, you know, at this point, I'm starting to do a lot more studies. So, you know, one of my daughters was a figure skater, which was right behind the Barnes & Noble. That's how old we are. There was actually a bookstore. and so I spent a lot of time there, and I would just go strip the bookshelves of all of the Christian histories and how the Bible came to be. And, you know, I was learning things I had never learned before, and really seeing the challenge on some of the stuff that I believe. So there's a lot into that, but fast forward, when I decide to start walking away, I, of course, am intense. So I write a thesis. I write like a 12-page thesis on why the Bible is not the true word of God. And, you know, so that's why I was surprised when Sharon goes, that was the first time you were called the Antichrist? Like, God, people have been calling me the Antichrist for a long time. And so, you know, and eventually even my ex said he, you know, I brought the devil into the household. So they also, I was driving, I'll never forget this. We were driving to a family member's home and three of my five children basically said, you know, Mom, when he comes in, when he being my ex, when he walks into the house, we see your whole demeanor change. Your shoulders get tense. Your whole way you behave changes. We all hate it. We really want you to leave. Like, my kids were telling me this.
So wait, when you said ex, you weren't yet. This was, no, he was, you
this
were
is
still
when
married.
We were still there. And, you know, I have, you know, there's several different touch points when you can look back at the cracks, right? So that's where, when you were talking about how do you talk to these people, you know, it didn't happen overnight. There's these little things that start, the cracks that start to happen over years. And that was a foundational crack for me, just to see what my children were witnessing
kids
and seeing.
So perceptive and, to body language.
So fast forward, when I walked away, they were all relieved and grateful, and not one of them held a belief. No matter, in spite of, Sharon, all of the homeschooling and the devotions and the home church and all that stuff, not one of them had their own personal relationship with God and thought it was all a bunch of hogwash and ultimately hid stuff because, like, they wanted no part of it.
Honestly, Tracy, it's like I could be your kid because, like, all of my siblings have walked away, like, in some version of it. Like, I have, like, two siblings who are still somewhat practicing of religion, but for the most part, they've all walked away. They've all transitioned the, and if they do practice religion, it's, like, very different. And I'm like, okay. All of that homeschooling and home
all
church,
the devotionals, all
the family
what was
worship,
it, morning worship?
Family worship every day. We had family worship every day from 8 a.m. to 8:30 with my dad.
I think it makes it worse.
Bro, we were over it. We were like,
I think you can overdo it.
I think
for your kids, they're like, nah.
I think when you give kids, like, more freedom to explore, a lot of times they end up staying.
Interesting. When you give them the choice, I think that's something me and my husband talk about a lot because he was raised Christian. My husband is Molly's cousin. So when you're raised Christian, he was more like progressive Christian. So he does not have near the amount of trauma that I do, which, like, good for you. but, like, we both discussed this years ago. When you are given the choice to explore things and to ask questions and things like that, and then you choose Christianity or whatever, you choose that religion, I think it sticks better, right? Like, you were given a choice. When it's shoved down your throat and you have no choice and you're born into it, that's when I think kids have that reaction. They're just like, nah, I'm good. You know, like, I think you need, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, are there any statistics? I mean, I geek out on data and stuff like that.
Give me the data.
Are there any statistics on what percentage of fundy-raised kids are still in their faith at age 30 versus
I know a
what
shit
percentage
ton of them?
I would love to know what that
I know a
percentage
shit ton
is.
Of them.
Yeah, really.
But I'm in the Midwest. I'm in the Midwest. So I feel like... What else do you do?
And in Lancaster County, there's still a lot. Like, they say that our family's a real anomaly. And I do want to make sure I add this part. So I walked away. That was back in 2006. You know, my kids were in age ranges. They were grateful. I took the majority of, you know, the emotional care for them at that point. Very difficult relationship with their dad because he did not leave the belief system. And so I thought we were great. 10 years on, great. I think we're great until one of my children starts having this trauma that starts to surface years after. And I was baffled because I'm like, I left it. I've apologized for it. I've walked away from it. And she was having a lot of, you know, the spanking rituals that happened to her when she was younger, this trauma coming back into her body and make very difficult for her to have those conversations with me. And, you know, it definitely put a wedge in our relationship because I was confused. I was like, I don't know what else I can do. And so it was actually coming into your podcast, episode 27. You know, there was a couple things that was happening at that time. We have tie-ins with Larry Tomczak, and you guys can look him up. But he writes one of those awful abuse manuals called "The God the Rod, and Your Child's Bod." And his daughter then, you know, brings a sexual abuse case against him in 2013. And of course, I was already out; didn't pay much attention to that. And so as I started looking that case up and seeing this entire community of your age children growing up with the trauma that you experienced through that, it was a light bulb that just went off in my head. And it was, yes, I've walked away, but I have had no understanding of what the developmental years of living in that has been like. And when I listened to episode 27, when you guys were on there and you talked about Michael Pearl and How to Train a Child, and that wasn't the book of choice that we used, but it was very similar. I was like, I'm listening to my daughter here. Like, I feel like this is my daughter telling me things that my daughter can't tell me because of, you know, I'm too close to it. Was earth shattering for me. I just want to say. So thank you. Thank you for your podcast finding that. And you guys are giving voice. And it was like, I was able to hear from you and then go back and go, I get it. I get things that I didn't get. And I did rob you. I robbed you. Even though I got out, I robbed you of some really crucial, crucial years. And yeah. So thank you.
Wow.
Thank you. That felt really affirming and validating. And I'm like tearing up a lot right now. Thank you. This is why we do this. It's healing. We're healing together in community. And it's been such an incredible experience to connect with people like you who lived through it from a different perspective, you know, and like raised your kids in it. So yeah.
Hi, I'm Sadie Carpenter, co-host of the Leaving Eden podcast, and I was raised in a cult. I signed purity pledges. I cried at the altar. I went out door-to-door soul winning, and I didn't own a pair of jeans until I was 20 years old. I saw it all and did it all as I grew up, completely immersed, pun fully intended, in the independent fundamental Baptist movement. With my co-host Gavriel Hacohen, I unpack all of this from the hilarious to the traumatic back to the hilarious on the Leaving Eden podcast. New episodes release every Monday on all podcast streaming platforms. We recommend new listeners start by checking out episode 57, in which we discuss the bite model and give an overview of my personal story.
I still am working through it. I'm in a new relationship now with somebody who has a child, and a lot of my stuff is coming up as I'm like watching her. Like, there's like this impulse of like, why are you letting your child just run around and explore? Because we weren't allowed to do that.
That's what children do.
There was like in the Michael, like to train up a child, there was the blanket training, right? So there was, my parents didn't do it exactly like that. They had their own version of it, but we couldn't like really leave our area. I don't remember any parts of my childhood where I was somewhere I wasn't supposed to be. I was like very much so like in line. Like we were lined up. We had our places that we were supposed to be, the things we were supposed to do, and we did them. And we did them without question, and we did them with a good attitude, because if we didn't, we knew what the consequences were. And the consequences were ritualistic beatings that would take place many times like after a period of time from the behavior occurring. So you'd just be like waiting. Like, oh, I know God. I'm going to get was my more ass whooped.
I think that was more psychologically like fucked me up than the actual spankings.
Like, go upstairs and like wait for your dad.
My
and
parents had me wait like an hour one time.
Yeah. Mm.
And I remember I put on 7 pairs of underwear because I didn't want it to hurt so bad.
They never came either.
That was the thing. What? I think they forgot about me.
Oh no, they came and spanked us. We'd wait.
Well, they did most of the time, but there was one day where I just sat there in perpetual
anxiety
waiting to get beat. And I was like, where are they?
I think the most sadistic part of it is when they would spank you, they wanted you to be an active participant of it. So you had to count.
Yes.
You had to, each parent had their own thing. My dad was like, if you cried, you would get 10 more whacks.
It gets worse.
My mom was like, if you scream, it gets worse. Stop.
Then it starts all over again.
Yeah. After you like get controlled, then it starts again, right? And so it's like,
I need another drink.
Yeah, it was crazy. And so it's like, when I think about like how ritualistic this was, and it was like very specific, and then like they would be like, okay, now give me a hug. Like,
yes,
I forgive you.
So screwed
up. I forgive you. Give me a hug. Tell me that you love me. And we'd have to be like, I love you. Thank you. And like,
if you watch Shiny Happy People, I feel like it's very much modeled. What our parents did is like, you know, to some extent, it's very much modeled off of that. Even if it wasn't so strategic, we can all relate to it to some extent.
Well, it was like the same pattern of behavior. Yeah. It was the teaching
in all of the books of that day.
And I'm just going to say, okay, as a mother who inflicted corporal punishment and psychological trauma on my kids in the name of a loving God, I am so sorry to you guys. That has done more to fuck with your head about what love really is, about what affirmation and safety should be about. And I'm going to say to any parent out there that thinks that, hey, even just one little swat is okay, you got to really rethink this. Because if you listen to your heart, I know that I never felt totally okay with it. I always had this dissonance inside. And I was grabbing onto, hey, I want to do what God wants because that's going to keep my kids from going to hell. And it is just such bullshit. And I am so sorry, Molly, and I am so sorry, Rachel, that you two were subjected to such severe abuse, not yes of your body, but even more of your mind and your spirit. And I'm just so sorry.
And we are ready to burn the whole fucking thing down.
Tear it down.
If we can join forces.
We ride at dawn, ladies.
I really think we should have a book burning ceremony because my mom's like, I don't know what to do with these books. We don't follow this shit anymore. And I'm like, can I have them? I want to burn them.
And I want, you know, I've talked to some people like getting the American Academy of Pediatrics. They need to have a warning. This stuff is not okay to teach young mothers. This is not okay. No. And, you know, I think another aspect that's really important, and I've had these conversations, is I grew up with corporal punishment. The boomers, right?
Yep,
we did. Corporal punishment. It was in schools. It was accepted in the norms of society. My father did beat me on a couple of occasions, and I think he went way too far. I was blistered. I had marks. But he was an alcoholic who was angry, and there was something in there that I could categorize that as that. And I think stepping back and looking at your generation, this is taught not to be done in anger. This is taught to be very methodical and to be a participant and to receive the correction of God is way more fucked up.
So much worse.
Much more.
I just want to acknowledge that because I was just going to say, I think the psychological damage, like when you know, okay, my dad is pissed off, like I made him very angry.
What I was doing was
super unsafe. This is a knee-jerk reaction, or he's an alcoholic and he's kind of an asshole and this makes sense.
Right.
Compared to like your dad who's like a preacher on Sundays. And
calmly comes in to hit you.
And just has, and they bring in like a PCV pipe, like with those like plumbing tools, and they would like whoosh, through the air and it would leave these big red welts.
Or even like a kitchen tool where they come in and they're like, Yeah. This is the thing they we used hit to you brag with. To We're going to keep friends. It right oh. up here, and I'm going to pull it out.
They used to
anytime.
They would brag to their friends about how they had broken multiple spoons on us.
Yep,
like
yep.
it was a I got one broken on me too. Story Trick. They would share. Yeah. yeah, it was weird. It was so yeah. weird.
It's so weird. It is significantly weirder than your parent being upset and yes. hitting you because yes. honestly, to me. That makes more sense. My mom was really yes. pissed off at me one time and I was older and she was in the kitchen like cleaning something and I just mouthed off to her and she turns around and like slaps me across the face with a wet washcloth. But that is not traumatizing to me. Right. That makes more sense because
it's the dissociation. That is yes. the thing. What it is it's completely stripping context and humanity out of it. It's yes. like, it's a clinical procedure. It has nothing to do with relationship. It has nothing to do with human connection. It's this clinical, I'm going to inflict something on you and you're going to thank me for it. And oh, it is
you're gonna take
fucked
it.
Up
you're gonna thank
beyond
me.
Belief. And, you know, there's an interesting thing for me. So my career kind of pivoted into the animal behavior world, you know, behavioral science.
I love your pictures of horses. I'm so jealous.
I was actually going to say, I really want to come visit you and just spend time with your horses.
Sharon, please, can I come visit you when we just ride horses constantly? Come down.
Please,
you are I used totally to have my amazing. Own horse.
I went on a little weekend getaway 2 weeks ago on a horse farm, and they had like over 60 horses boarded there. And wow. they were so friendly. They come like trotting up to the fence and like
horses are therapy.
Yeah. And I would pet them and they would just like rub their faces on me. They were so cute.
Okay. Sorry, Sharon.
No, that's totally fine.
We but love our like, horses.
When like one thing I've noticed is that like the whole this is a little segue thing or a little side trail, but the whole idea of like, let's let the babies cry it out. You know, they need to learn to sleep on their own. They need to, yeah, it's like, I'm like, you know, if you had a mother dog whose puppies were in another room yelping and screaming and she wasn't frantic to get to them, you'd say she wasn't a very good mother. Same thing with a horse, with its baby. I mean, we have stripped the humanity, the animal instinct, the good animal. Are you guys hearing an ad for Colonial
no.
Show?
You're good. Keep going.
An ad for what?
Colonial Chevrolet?
It's for the brand.
Wait a
Molly
second.
Shirt.
No. Where is that coming from?
It's not the brand on my shirt, but that was a good
Are
one.
Do you have
ad?
Other tabs open? Do you have other tabs
no,
open?
No, wait, seriously. I can't even hear you guys. I'm hearing an ad for Colonial Chevrolet.
You must have something.
Do you
on
have
your
other tabs open?
I don't, okay, now
this
it's
so
gone.
Funny.
Okay, that was just.
Do you
I
have
don't
other
think
tabs
I have,
open?
I think she must.
I don't know.
You
can
have
you hear me
to.
Now?
It's yeah, coming
we
from
can,
somewhere.
We never stopped hearing
We're
you.
We're gonna have to edit this out.
Bizarre. I know.
Or we leave it in. I don't know.
Bizarre.
I feel like
Colonial
we should leave
Chevrolet,
it in.
You owe us some money now yeah. because we just promoted you.
You could okay. Leave it in and go, when boomers and technology mix.
What was I saying? I was thinking about, oh, yeah.
Dogs and horses. You have to strip right. your humanity.
The mothering
you
instinct,
can't
humanity.
Your instincts.
We spent some time in Costa Rica and we'd watch the monkeys, right? And the monkeys have babies that are just on their backs. They're mm-hmm. being held on their you know, by the mom, and they never put them down. And if we think of us, you guys talk about let's be in our bodies, right? Because we are physical beings. We have a body with a nervous system and everything that is designed or evolved, whatever you want to call it, to be here in this world. But we are in a very artificial world. And one of the things that we do in behavioral science is we look at, there's a whole specialty of ethology, which is studying a species in its native environment apart from the influence of men. And how that species actually behaves is very different than when they're in an artificial contained environment. And a baby, if you're out on the Serengeti and the baby's left off in another hut and it's screaming and crying, I mean, what are you doing? Attracting predators. Our brains, our bodies were evolved to stay connected and to be responding to one another's emotions and emotional signals. And so that whole idea of let the baby just cry it out, I'm just like, that makes no sense in terms of human connection. It's a clinical, weird setup for our current society and convenience and whatever, but it's just weird. So I want to fast forward that to this idea of how we interact with one another as humans. If someone's behavior is a problem, then having an expressing our emotions about it is what is normal, is what is natural, helps us to understand how we feel and how the other person feels and to talk about it. And that is the exact opposite of this clinical discipline in no anger, show no anger because that's sin. And that it's so fucked up and it is so far away from what is healthy. And okay, I'm sorry.
And done instinctual. Ranting. No, that's very
instinctual.
And instinctual. You're made in fundamentalism to suppress your human loving instincts.
Yes, you are.
And I think as a mother, intuition. That's, you know, it's to know that my kids will always struggle with certain traumas because that was robbed from them during key developmental years is a difficult, difficult thing to own, to face, to verbalize, and then to try to extend hope to recover from that. It's very tough, very tough.
I can imagine.
It is really powerful to hear the other side perspective of it and to like hear how you also like Tracy, when you were saying that, like, your child, you know, had these traumas coming back up, and it was difficult for you two to, like, be able to talk about it until you heard our episode where we discussed it. Mm-hmm. And, like, that just gives me a lot of hope, like, for folks. My parents are still in denial that they ever really did any of this. They don't think they did it.
Yeah. So much so that I screenshotted, because I'm still a boomer, so I'm still learning technology. I'm like, how do I get this clip off of this podcast? So I screenshotted it and sent it to my ex. And I said, it's really hard for you to hear, I think, from your own kids. Please listen. Please show some curiosity and go out there and listen to what their peers are saying that they had to go through. And he didn't answer me. So I don't know if he ever did that. But, you know, I continued to do that because it's much easier for me to hear your stories than my own daughter's stories for clear reasons, right?
Sure.
And so, yes, when you guys were being so articulate and going through some of the, you know, the emotions that you had to turn off. So I don't know if there's other people that your parents could listen to other people's stories that are out there, because it is enlightening. It's very, very enlightening. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. Just, I think in that episode you talked about the compassion exercise, which I was pretty impressed by, that you would be able to say, hey, they were kind of kids having kids and brought trauma in, and, you know, I don't think any of us woke up in the morning to try to traumatize our children. We were trying to break some cycles. We just had some really bad training manuals that should be burned and outlawed and carry warnings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, like, it would be... I love that there are more people now talking about this. I follow a couple people on Instagram who've started talking about Michael and Debbie Pearl's work and how they're... parents' parenting style were influenced, and it has been helpful even to hear other people with my same like story, and so it feels validating. And also it's like I tend to gaslight myself a little bit, like I didn't go through that much, it wasn't that bad, you know, like that's always something that kind of shows up, like my parents were doing the best they could, it wasn't that bad, you know. And then you hear someone talking about it and you're like, shit, that's the same user manual my parents used, it was that bad. So yeah, people do need to keep talking about it. And I'm happy that we have this beautiful platform in which to have these conversations and bring awareness.
Yeah. And you know, the twist that's very weird to me is because for me to face that as a mother has taken a lot of, like, I've cried a lot of tears about that. And, you know, you talk about this whole forgiveness platform. I've had to be able to look at myself in the mirror, look at my history, be gentle with myself for knowing what I've done and deal with the fact that I can't undo it. And a lot of the people stuck in fundamentalism who are supposed to have the corner market on forgiveness and grace can't do it. It's like, you won't face it. And I get very frustrated with my generation. It's like, yes, it's hard. It's hard to see this at your hands, but you need to do it. You need to look at it and you need to hear their stories.
And I just want to say again, we are so proud of and grateful to you two for what you are doing for yourselves, what you're doing for others, and what you've done for us. And thank you very, very much.
Well, on that note, thank you for joining us for this amazing conversation. But listeners, there is a part two. You're going to need to head over to Tracy and Sharon's Confessions of a Cult Sisters, Feet of Clay. It's Feet of Clay, Confessions of a Cult, the Cult Sisters. Head over
it's
to their
lot
page.
Of the same world.
It's a mouthful.
Yes, and thank you, everyone, our listeners, for joining in on this episode. It was definitely weighty and
hilarious.
Also hilarious and also thought-provoking, and I hope healing as you hear. You know, if you're our age, you're hearing people that are our parents' age saying they're sorry and validating our experiences. And I think that that is so beautiful. And you do not have to stop listening to Tracy and Sharon, because you can go over to their podcast and hear more about them and their stories and their journey. And we hope you do, because they've got a lot to say and they've got great things to say. And they have a lot of episodes on purity culture, which is also healing. So, as we conclude, will you guys just tell people where they can find you on social media and
where they can listen to this next episode?
Yes.
And where they can listen to this
next one. We are Feet of Clay, Confessions of the Cult Sisters, available on all podcast platforms. But because it is such a mouthful and it's not always enough characters allowed on all social platforms, it's lots of combinations. So if you go over to Instagram at feetofclay.cultsisters, you will see a link tree and it'll take you to everything else that we have in the social media realm, because, you know, we boomers love social media.
All right. Sounds good.
On that note, we'll see you over on their podcast next.
Yep. Listen to part two of our conversation on Feet of Clay. Bye.
Thanks again.
Bye. Looking for a safe place to deconstruct? If so, I have the place for you. We have a Facebook support group, and if you're not in it, you should absolutely be in it, because there's a lot of amazing conversations happening in this group. So, if you are wanting to be in a community with others who are in the same deconstruction process, find us on Facebook, Cheers to Leaving support group. You can also click the link in our show notes and it will take you to that page. You can request to join, answer the questions, and become part of the conversation. We're looking forward to seeing you there.
Thanks for listening to Cheers to Leaving. We are seriously so glad you're here. Follow us on Instagram at Cheers to Leaving. Our sound and editing is by Cameron Smith. Please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Please subscribe and share with your friends and others who may be deconstructing. You can also email us at cheerstoleaving@gmail.com with your stories about leaving evangelicalism. See you in 2 weeks.